Welcome to the Heritage Wealth Advisors first quarter 2019 market outlook conference call. All participants are now in a listen-only mode. I will now turn the call over to your host, Jay Jordan, Heritage Wealth Advisors Chief Investment Officer. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone, and a belated Happy New Year. This is Jay Jordan. Welcome to our first quarter 2019 market outlook call. For those that would like to follow along, there is an optional slide deck available on our website to support the call. If you go to www.heritagewealth.net and then you click on Resources in the top right corner, there's a drop-down that then will say News and Updates, and from there, Investment Management, and you will be able to find the slides. There will also be a replay of the call, which will be available on the website later this afternoon. I'm joined on the call today by our Manager of Research, Kerry Baronian. Our agenda this morning is to review the recent market performance, discuss our current views with respect to the economy and capital markets, and then to provide some insights into recent portfolio shifts. So I appreciate everybody being on the call, and with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kerry Baronian.
Thanks, Jay. 2018 was a challenging year for financial markets, with the bulk of the weakness coming in the fourth quarter. It was the worst quarter for equities since the third quarter of 2011, and December was the worst month for equities since October of 2008. U.S. large-cap equities, as measured by the S&P 500, were down 4% for the year. On a relative basis, they were the top-performing equity asset class last year. U.S. small-cap equities were down 11% in 2018, while international developed equities were down 14%, and emerging market equities were down 15%. Unfortunately, fixed income did not provide much of a ballast in portfolios last year. U.S. core bonds were essentially flat for the period. While many investors rotated into traditional safe haven assets such as U.S. core bonds during the fourth quarter, interest rates increased throughout much of the remainder of the year, which was negative for fixed income returns. As it relates to other fixed income sectors, Treasury inflation-protected securities, TIPS, were down 1% in 2018, and then high-yield corporate bonds and preferred securities were down 5% and 6%, respectively. They are less traditional fixed income asset classes that historically have exhibited more equity-like characteristics. Overall, cash was the top-performing asset class last year, generating a positive 2% return for the year. With respect to sector performance, some of the more defensive sectors, such as healthcare and utilities, held up modestly better than other areas of the market last year. Information technology sold off meaningfully during the fourth quarter. It was down 17% for the quarter, completely erasing its year-to-date gain. During the third quarter, we discussed in several of our investment communications that healthy growth expectations were being priced into technology stocks that, in our view, were starting to become unsustainable. While technology stocks did lead the way down during the fourth quarter, the steep equity sell-off was very broad-based, with most other sectors going down by a comparable amount. With that, I will turn the call over to Jay to detail what we view as the primary catalyst for the equity pullback.
So in actuality, or as Kerry mentioned, our view leading into the fourth quarter, while constructive on the markets, was that we believe that there were pockets of the market where excesses were building, both in terms of expectations and valuations, specifically in the more growth-oriented sectors of the market, such as technology. And we took steps to try to mitigate portfolios from those pockets of risk that we believe were building in the economy. In actuality, the broad-based nature of the market decline was a result of catalysts that have begun to call into question the durability of the economic expansion as we go forward, resulting in broad-based declines across sectors, really irrespective of valuation. Now, a couple of those catalysts that I think are worth mentioning, economic data. We did see economic growth data inflect and begin to slow from the above-trend levels that we experienced in the summer. We also saw corporate earnings guidance weaker. For example, Federal Express and Apple both lowered their earnings expectations over the course of the fourth quarter. Political uncertainty has been a risk that has been being weighed by the market, and certainly the government shutdown that we're currently experiencing substantiates some of that risk as it relates to how markets will value future expectations. You know, our view on the government shutdown is really going to be based in the duration of the government shutdown. You know, there are estimates out there that suggest that every week of a government shutdown pairs about a tenth of a percent off of economic growth. You know, the reality is that history doesn't provide us with too many data points to look to in terms of an expectation of a longer government shutdown, but that will absolutely be a part of our analysis as we look forward. Trade uncertainty is another unknown, specifically negotiations with China, and continue to weigh on the market. And then finally and importantly has been the normalization of monetary policy by the Federal Reserve. And I think this is critical to discuss because if you look back over time, it's during periods when the Federal Reserve begins to raise interest rates that volatility has historically been a normal outcome within the market. As the market begins to really question whether the Fed will overshoot and cause a recession. So while we think it's absolutely critical to remain focused on each of these catalysts, and they're a part of our ongoing review, to discern their impact on the economy and, as a result, the market. You know, our view is that the reset of expectations and valuations suggest a more negative view than the data support. As an example, leading indicators, while slowing, continue to predict positive growth for the economy. So I want to spend a minute and just discuss some of the sources of demand that drive our outlook for continued growth. First, the deleveraging cycle for the consumer has resulted in balance sheet health, which is now at levels that we haven't seen since the early 2000s, and suggests a return to trend growth in private credit, which would be positive for economic growth. Second, strong employment trends support a continued acceleration in wage growth, which coupled with an elevated savings rate suggests buying power on the part of the consumer. Third, and again, this relates to the consumer, and I think it's important to focus on the consumer because the consumer still represents 70% of the domestic economy. Declining energy prices will be a potential boost to consumer spending over the course of 2019. And in contrast to 2016, the impact of declining energy prices on capital spending and jobs is likely to be less given the much lower level of spending in the energy sector today versus where we were 2 years ago. And then finally, and a number of you have heard me say this in the past, and we believe it still rings true, is that we're still not seeing those areas of excess from a spending perspective in the economy that suggest that there's a period of absorption that needs to occur in order to erase those excesses. And what I really mean there is that if you look at cyclical spending, it remains below historic peaks that have been associated with economic downturns. Specifically thinking about housing as an example, vacancy rates remain very low while the capital stock of housing continues to age to levels that has historically resulted in increased activity within the housing sector, an important component of the overall economy. Flipping quickly to overseas economies, trends are similar with economic growth slowing but remaining in positive territory. You know, we're taking the view that China is critical to overseas growth by virtue of the scope and size of their trading relationships, particularly with Europe. And we're encouraged by the more than 40 acts of stimulus that have been implemented in the Chinese economy over the course of the last 6 months of 2018. As a result of this stimulus, we've reached a positive inflection point in terms of the credit impulse, which is a measure of liquidity in the Chinese economy, which we think should provide support for growth in the second half of the year. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Kerry to talk about the market and asset classes and what we've been doing in client portfolios.
Thanks, Jay. As we mentioned earlier, the steep equity sell-off in the fourth quarter was very broad-based. Negative investor sentiment reached extreme levels and resulted in indiscriminate selling as well as significant compression in valuations around the globe. In our view, the markets currently appear to be pricing in a deeper economic slowdown than the underlying economic data suggests. Ultimately, the economy should drive the long should drive long-run equity return expectations. Additionally, lower valuation levels should provide a boost to those return expectations. In analyzing the economy, monetary policy is a very important factor. Presently, the Federal Reserve has signaled 2 interest rate hikes in 2019. At the same time, they've also indicated a willingness to become more dependent in their, or excuse me, more data dependent in their decision making. So if we see a continued economic slowdown as well as modest inflation, we would expect the Fed to pause on further rate hikes. Currently, markets actually appear to be pricing in a rate cut in the second half of this year. Given solid underlying economic data, we think that a rate cut this year is unlikely. We do expect the Fed to become more data dependent in their decision making and ultimately pause on rate hikes in the short term. With respect to the U.S. dollar, differential in growth rates between the U.S. and international economies have been declining. Growth rates around the world have been converging. This, coupled with U.S. dollar purchasing power parity at extended levels, should push the U.S. dollar lower in our view. A weaker U.S. dollar would be a net positive for emerging markets, which continue to hold a significant level of U.S. dollar-based debt on balance sheet. So what does all of this mean with respect to client investment portfolios? Our advice and the actions we've taken across client portfolios recently have really followed 3 primary themes. The first is a focus on ensuring that each of our clients is positioned in line with their long-run strategic asset allocation. The second theme is upgrading the overall quality of client portfolios given the broad-based sell-off in equities last quarter. And the third is actively loss harvesting across client portfolios in order to reduce net capital gains and reduce taxes. This is a strategy that we were very aggressive about implementing last quarter amid the significant equity sell-off. Circling back to the first theme, a focus on ensuring that each client is positioned in line with their long-run strategic asset allocation, we want to make sure that each client has the appropriate mix of stocks versus fixed income and cash in their portfolios in order to meet their long-run wealth objectives while also managing shorter-term volatility. So we have taken steps recently to rebalance client portfolios and make sure they are positioned appropriately. Then, circling back to the second theme, upgrading the overall quality of client portfolios given the broad-based sell-off in equities last quarter, we believe that stable underlying economic fundamentals combined with significant compression in valuations argue for maintaining an allocation to equities and client portfolios. Additionally, we believe that oversold conditions essentially put some high-quality global franchise businesses on sale during the quarter. So an example of a portfolio shift we made recently was taking down exposure to U.S. Energy Master Limited Partnerships and deploying the proceeds into U.S. large cap and U.S. small cap equities. While we remain positive on the underlying fundamentals of Master Limited Partnerships, when we have the opportunity to shift into higher quality global franchise businesses with better balance sheets at compelling valuations, we want to do so. Additionally, another shift that we recently made in client portfolios was selling out of bank loans and again investing the proceeds in U.S. equities. While credit spreads have increased recently, they still reside near historically low levels. This combined with compelling valuations in equities, we would prefer to take our economic risk in equities as opposed to the credit markets of fixed income. We think that there's greater upside reward potential associated with equities. And then finally, in light of our view around the dollar that it could potentially weaken this year, we elected to sell out of international equities that are hedged against currency effects and rotate into international equities that are unhedged.
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate your joining the call. A copy of the call will be available on the website along with the slides. So in the meantime, please don't hesitate to reach out to, if you have any additional questions, to either Carrie, myself, or any other member of the Heritage team. So thank you all for being on the call. I hope everybody has a great day.